Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
Hey, Film Files, what is happening? Welcome back. You're here. We're here. We're so excited. I'm so excited for this episode because we got the band back together for this one. Today, we are joined for the first time in I don't know how long by the original crew, Ben and Stu. What is going on, guys?
Not much.
Maybe two decades.
Yeah, something like that.
It could possibly be. Okay, this is great. So I sent out a list of like five movies, and we settled on Donnie Darko from 2001. This is so wild because I've seen this movie a whole bunch of times, but I've seen it in three different eras. The first era is when I was probably like 16 or 17, and I had no idea that I had no idea what this movie was about. It just went completely over my head, and I was like, this movie is the deepest shit I've ever seen. And then the second era I saw it in, I was fully aware that this movie, I did not really understand the interworkings of this movie. I knew it was about time travel, but there were so many things I didn't understand. And then this final era, I decided that I was going to do whatever I had to do to figure the fuck out of this movie, because it came out in 2001. It was directed by this guy named Richard Kelly, who's only directed like three things almost 25 years later. So I guess, Ben, why? Well, first of all, I have three trivias.
Three trivias?
I got three trivias. Okay, so I was looking at 2001 when this movie came out, but I want to start with some time travel stuff. Okay, so how many different years are traveled to in the Back to the Future franchise? And you can have bonus points if you can tell me the different years that are traveled to.
I'll just throw out five.
I say three.
It was right in the middle at four.
Oh.
We had 1885.
Yep.
1955.
Okay.
1985 and 2015.
Okay. That is tricky because going back to 1985, they started there.
True. But Einstein traveled 1 minute into the past.
Okay.
Okay.
The perfect trivia for this, where you can get hung up on technicalities and just lost.
Oh, I know. And this is one of those movies that's about time travel. You know, like Donnie Darko's great, and we'll get into that, but it's not really about the time travel.
That's what I... Yeah, I agree. It's not about time travel.
It can't be, because it doesn't make any fucking sense.
None.
Okay, just this one last one. 2010, the top 10 highest grossing movies. How many of those movies were sequels or part of an existing IP?
2010?
I'm sorry, 2001.
Oh. I want to say 10.
You think all 10 were part of an existing IP?
I'll go for 9.
Oh, yeah.
It was 9.
Oh.
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Fellowship of the Ring, Shrek, Monsters, Inc., Rush Hour 2, Mummy Returns, Pearl Harbor, Jurassic Park 3, Planet of the Apes, and Hannibal.
Wow.
Nowadays, it'd be like 12 out of 10 somehow.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, so Ben, first of all, did you watch the director's cut or did you watch the theatrical cut?
So I only had time for the theatrical cut. Okay. I'm probably going to watch the director's cut later, but I did research on how they are different. And I'm at the very least glad I didn't watch the director's cut, because it sounds like what happens with the director's cut is they try to position the plot as literally as possible with exposition and actual literal pages from the philosophy of time travel, if I'm not mistaken. So I've watched the theatrical cut, the original cut, kind of the same reason you did, because that's the only one I was familiar with. To see if this film was as deep as we all thought it was, 23 years ago.
So is it deep or dumb? I guess, Ben, you can start with why you thought this movie was the right choice of those five that I sent you.
Maybe the answer is just yes. It's an interesting case study because it's really great at encapsulating what it feels like to be a teenager and that you think you know absolutely everything. And this film is kind of like that. It comes across as it kind of is deeper than you think it is, but it really isn't. I was still entertained and I liked it, but I feel like it tried a little bit too much, but I can appreciate the ambition considering what we just talked about franchises ruining everything. I can appreciate a film that goes for it and doesn't necessarily stick the landing on everything.
Yeah, it was a big swing, right?
Yeah, it was a that was yeah, a big swing.
There were times watching it this time that I really feel like Richard Kelly does not want you to get it. You know, the director's cut, they have these changes where they show the pages from The Philosophy of Time Travel. Of course, it's a fictional book, and each chapter is just like a paragraph that they show on the screen. And so basically, if I can Cliff note this, there's the two different timelines in this. There's the primary universe and then the tangent universe. So the jet falling on Donnie's room originally did not create the tangent universe. That was a side effect of the tangent universe. And so when a tangent universe occurs within an artifact, a living receiver is also chosen. So Donnie Darko was the chosen one, and the end. So this was the
One.
I'm not high, I swear.
Even if you were.
Are you gonna get into the manipulated living and manipulated dead stuff too? Because I was reading up on that, like, oh yeah, I totally got that from the theatrical cut, and I'm also shaking my head no, right?
Yeah, there were so many things. Like at the end, he has power. He has superpowers as the quote unquote living receiver. And so he has super strength. So he was able to like hammer that axe into the mascot's head, which fine. And then he rips the engine off of the plane when he goes to the lookout point at the end. He rips the engine off the plane and throws it into the black hole, which I totally did not pick up on.
I didn't pick up on it either.
And then.
I'll be honest. Watching the end of the film, I was completely confused how this could have generated this wormhole, hole in time, whatever you want to call it. And I understand that there's other that's going on there, but to be honest, I was confused. And frankly, by that time, a lot bored. I just, there's, it has so many wonderful actors and actresses in it. And they've all done such good work since this film. And yet I had to fight sleep. I mean, I got halfway through it. I had to stop it. I went back to it 2 days later and finished it again. So many wonderful actors and actresses, but is this their best work? Oh, hell no. And Jake and Maggie, both in the same film, is hilarious because they really did act like brother and sister. Mary McDowell is obviously good and she's so beautiful too.
I always
Jeez
remember her
Louise.
from Independence Day.
Yeah, Independence Day, absolutely. And of course, Dances with Wolves, where she, made her mark, if you will.
No, I was just going to say, jumping off what you said to Elizabeth Darko or Maggie Gyllenhaal's character, I thought they did her a disservice. I actually wanted to get more of her life in this mix. Because she's in the family, see little sister with a sparkle motion. You get more of the parents. I
Right.
really enjoyed the parents. maybe more than any character in the film. But yeah, I feel like they could have played off of the more real life brother sister dynamic with the Gyllenhaals.
The Maggie Gyllenhaal's character, Elizabeth, I think that she was pushed to the side to focus on this angsty, dark, mysterious, mentally ill kid that was so less interesting. I think that Maggie's character was much more interesting, and yet she's just that angst. She's just that, not an angsty, but just a teenager standing off to the side laughing at everything that's going on.
And plus, they're talking about Donnie's supposed to be the genius. Elizabeth just got into Harvard.
Yeah, no one's
She
talking
just
about it.
Yeah.
What? You're just gonna
No
put that as a
doubt.
side note?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, she comes in with the information, you know? I mean, hey.
Yeah, I feel like I still have a lot of love for this movie because of like my history with it, I guess. It's the epitome to me of a cult classic. Like it did terrible on release. It got this huge cult following in like the mid 2000s, and people still kind of go back and forth of, you know, is this deep or is this dumb? Because he put a lot of effort into the inter mechanics of this like time travel stuff, but then the writing, like the Smurf scene, is so fucking stupid. I mean, it's funny, but it's like 7 minutes of silly dialogue that's like, could we maybe put the 7 minutes of screen time to better use?
Oh, definitely it could have been put to better use. And honestly, I don't know where that conversation actually led to, if
Yeah, I mean,
anywhere.
it didn't really even play into the story at all.
No, ultimately it didn't.
And I guess Richard Kelly had to get all of this authorization to be able to talk about the Smurfs like this. And it's not,
Oh, yeah,
you know, a
licensing
Smurf
and
gangbang
everything.
would be hard to get authorized, I would think.
You think?
Plus, see, playing into the whole cult classic thing, it feels like the film is very much a product of its time. There was this weird slice of the late 90s and early 2000s where you had the question reality movies, if you want to call them that. Obviously, The Matrix. We covered Dark,
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
even if you want to talk about like American Beauty, Big Lebowski, some David Lynch films came out, like Lost Highway and Mulholland Drive, which David Lynch is something worth talking about in the context of this film because there's definitely a dreamlike quality where you almost feel like this is what I was thinking when I was watching this again. It's like this is almost like John Hughes run through a David Lynch filter, and it's not necessarily working with me at this age.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally agree.
That's such a great comparison, Ben. That's
Yeah.
exactly what it is.
Yeah, and
It
John
wants to be
Hughes
John
run through
Hughes,
a
but
David
it
Lynch filter. Pounded through a David Lynch filter.
exactly. Like it really wants to be both of those, and it doesn't really succeed in either one.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the character development.
Yeah, that's a great point, Stu, when it comes to the character development, because even like the main character who one of the main characters who's fascinating, I think, is Gretchen, and you don't really know who she is because her name's not her real name. So I don't know if that's supposed to create this aura with her, and she's supposed to be like a version of a femme fatale, but once again, another character who's kind of little undercooked because there's so much beneath the surface. Like they don't need to go into every detail about her life and like her mom being stabbed, minor details, right? But I want
Yeah.
Right.
And they bring it up multiple times, so you would expect that to tie into the story somehow.
And that's the slightly overweight individual, right? The young lady.
Gretchen is Jenna Malone's character, the love interest.
That's right. That's right. That's right. The love interest.
But
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, same thing with Tarita Chang. It just,
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that's what I
yeah,
was thinking of. Yeah.
it just reeks of like feature film debut director
Really
because
does.
there's so many, yeah, like you said, they mentioned the dad getting stabbed like four different times, and then that never really goes anywhere. And then you have these like wild ideas with time travel, and then you know, Seth Rogen's first movie, and his first line ever in Hollywood is, "I like your boobs."
It's a glimpse. What, a glimpse into the future, though. I'm going to stick with the time travel theme. It's his first lines in Hollywood are kind of like a glimpse of what his
Oh,
career has been.
totally.
There's a lot
It's
of
a frightening metaphor for a future, his inevitable future. I will say the soundtrack is fantastic.
Well, yeah.
You can't go wrong with Tears for Fears ever.
No, there's so much going on there.
There were so many questions that I remember wondering after each time that I saw it that were like, why is he laughing so hard at the very end? Why are all of the characters crying? Even though it seems like by the end of the movie, the previous 28 days never really happened. He went back in time. So like he never met Gretchen, he
No.
never shot Frank.
No.
All of these events never happened, but like Frank is crying.
Never burned down the pedophile's place. And
Yeah.
yet he's crying as well. I mean, it just seemed the Patrick Swayze character was a little yeah. I remember that. I guess I don't remember that from the first time I watched it because the most recent second time that I watched this movie, I was like, oh, there's a lot wrong with him.
The vibes he gave me, if you want to go back to another episode of Movie Show Theater, he gave the vibes of Christopher McDonald in Requiem for a Dream as Tappy Tibbins. It's just like this guy
Oh.
way too excited. First, what
Yes.
is he on? Second, what is wrong with him? How many
Oh,
bodies
yes.
does he have?
Well,
Yeah.
apparently no literal bodies, but plenty of pictures.
Oh, Patrick Swayze was such a good sport to take on this role.
I'm confused that he would have taken on that role. You know,
Yeah,
I'm thinking to
so
myself, why in the world would he was an A-lister, and this was obviously a thing, you know, a freshman project for this director.
yeah, apparently Drew Barrymore really liked it, and she d agreed to finance the film through her company, Flower Films. And
Okay.
so I think all of the talent in the movie was thanks to her name being attached. Because, like, Noah Wiley was in the height of ER fame during this.
What a gorgeous young man he is, isn't he? I mean,
Yeah.
my
I did
goodness.
really like those scenes.
Yeah, they were really fascinating.
For all of the character development misses, I really loved what you would maybe call the faculty. Going back to like the John Hughes comparison
Oh,
and
yeah.
creating characters you love to hate, Kitty Farmer, and
Yes.
somehow I doubt your commitment to sparkle motion.
Oh, dear
That's actually
Lord,
one thing
Kitty
I found
Farmer.
too that worked kind of well is how bleak this movie was, but every once in a while I found myself just like snort laughing at a couple of lines, mostly
Well,
anything related to Kitty Farmer because she's just like so abhorrible, so stuck, and like I don't know if she's like a byproduct of the satanic panic of the 80s rolled up into like the conservatism of the late 80s, but she's quite a treat in this one.
oh, she's.
She's so good.
Yeah, no, she was very good. Yeah.
I want to say too, that's another thing they nailed. So Jim Cunningham, his controlling fear segments, and I guess they'd be VHSs in the 1980s, those were perfect, like down to like the bad acting, like you can see in one scene the boom mic come
Oh,
down
I
over his,
know. Yeah.
like the music
Oh,
is actually like
yes.
I want to track down the music and listen to it if I haven't listened to it unintentionally, because it's probably on like a vaporwave channel on YouTube right now. I'm
Yeah,
not afraid anymore.
I'm not afraid anymore.
But it does play back into like one of the weaknesses of Donnie Darko. You feel like they like Richard Kelly could have picked Elaine, and this could have been one of the most hilarious things you've ever seen. But instead, it's this blend of like there's this humor mixed in, and then bleak and too serious sometimes. So then you're left at the end wondering like, what are you really going for in all of this? Yeah.
I found the scene where Donnie actually confronts him about that in the theater. I thought that was awesome. Of course, as a teacher, I would be like, bleh. But
To be told that you're the fucking Antichrist?
yeah, exactly. And not far wrong.
That's another thing that I found different on this watching 20 some years later. I wasn't really thinking a whole lot about the time travel stuff. I was thinking more about the lens of Donnie Darko's mental illness. So when I was watching it, I was almost watching it like it's from his perspective, and the way the characters say things that don't make sense, like the Smurf dialogue or Drew Barrymore's teacher being like, sit next to the boy you think is the cutest. It almost seems like everything is filtered through Donnie Darko's perspective so that the way people speak, the way they do things doesn't make sense, but it's because he probably most likely is schizophrenic. And there's this almost throwaway line from Dr. Thurman, his therapist. It's like, yeah, I've been giving him placebo pills, so there's a good chance that he's schizophrenic and not being treated for it. So there's one reading of the film that's just like, yeah, this is his perspective unfiltered, and that's what it's like. Like, that's very interesting.
And that's not very well explored. And then there's the scene in the school where he's talking to Noah Wyle about God's path for you, and he's like, I can't continue this conversation or I might
Because
lose
I'll
my
lose my
job.
job.
Which is like, it's a really poignant line getting into, like religion and schools and all of that. And there's a couple times where he, uses the word God, and but then they don't really follow up with much. It's like they just kind of threw every idea they had at the wall just to see what stuck.
No, I thought it was interesting because there's really not a whole lot of good and bad in this. It's really a lot of gray areas. And when it does venture into the true, this is not a good thing to do, or this is a good thing to do, it gets even grayer. To me, it did. I don't know if I'm making sense, but the whole end where he shoots Frank, I would have probably done the same thing in that instant if my girlfriend had just been run over by him. You know, I it wouldn't have been a, oh, I'm mentally ill and therefore I need to do this. This would have been like, this makes all the sense in the world. This prick just ran over somebody I cared about. I'm going to shoot them.
I read all there is to read on this philosophy of time travel, and when the engine falls through the house the first time, this like tangent universe already exists. And so Gretchen is killed inside of that universe, and Frank is killed inside of that universe. So the term for them is the manipulated dead. And their purpose is to try and lure Donnie into sending the artifact out of the tangent universe to collapse the black hole. And so Frank has Donnie flood the school, which ensures that Donnie will walk Gretchen home, which begins their love story. Because if Donnie is to kill Frank, he needs to be so upset and so mad. So Donnie losing his first love is the best way to generate that kind of anger. And I only know that because I did extensive reading on this movie because I wanted to understand everything about this movie. And again, it seems like this movie does not want us to understand it.
Well, and you having said all of that makes sense to a degree, because it wouldn't have happened had that not happened in the order that it happened. But again, it comes back to the paradox. If he travels or at least sends something back in time, how can any of those other events have happened would have led up to that moment? You understand? Not that there's a causality, but there's a hole, you know? So
It's really weird because I was probably reading some of the same stuff Jimmy was, and one of the theories, it's almost someone theorized that Donnie Darko is a reverse It's a Wonderful Life, because in It's a Wonderful Life, here's dude seeing that life is terrible without him. Donnie Darko is shown that actually life is actually great without him, which is very sad and maybe plays back into the schizophrenia mental illness mindset we were talking about. But yeah, there are a lot of holes of time travel, because it's like, so Frank is a real person and then he dies and becomes a future ghost. And after that,
I did,
yeah.
yeah, all of that. I just set it aside and went, okay, just suspend reality.
Yeah, you have to.
You really do. No, it's the whole when he Frank reveals himself as just being this little kid. Had we seen Frank before that?
There was a glimpse of his car driving by at the beginning when he's riding his bike home after the opening scene.
Okay, so but we never saw his face ever.
No.
Okay, good. Then that makes me feel a little better because I would have caught that, I would have thought. And in the circumstances when he revealed himself at the theater, that was interesting timing.
Yeah.
I don't.
One thing that's not explored going back to Elizabeth is you almost get the sense that Frank might be a boyfriend, so that there might be some familiarity there, maybe with Donnie too.
Frank and Elizabeth, you think?
I think Frank is Maggie Gyllenhaal's boyfriend.
Oh, really? Well, Frank went to get beer at the party, which makes sense in some.
I mean, he's definitely like in his 30s.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, but yeah, it was kind of funny because I was like, reading this pretend book by this pretend author. And it's like, yeah, I guess reading this, explains the movie a little bit better. But like, you could write whatever you want and then write a fictional, like, short book to explain whatever
Oh
you
yeah.
want. It's not like,
Oh yeah.
this is a classic piece of literature that puts everything perfectly in its, narrative place.
No, not at all. And the ultimately the interesting thing is that that's the sort of thing that people think happens when you read literature, but there are very few people who take it that word for word and literally, you know. Of course, we're surrounded by that and religions and all this other stuff, but again, it comes down to, you know, it's kind of like the Catcher in the Rye effect, you know, where people said you read Catcher in the Rye, you start to have funny feelings, you know, blah 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 blah, you're going to be bound for awful things. But if you read the book, it's also kind of boring, and really, it's just what most people do nowadays.
And that's hilarious that you mentioned that because reading through quotes, Richard Kelly, I
Yeah.
kid you not, said that Donnie Darko is Catcher in the Rye meets Philip K. Dick. That's what.
And there you go. That's a perfect analogy. That's an amalgam. That's, yep.
And that's another thing too. I would say that this film does suffer from some, even though I'll say I love Philip K. Dick. He was out of his mind, but I love a lot of what he did, but I would say this film suffers from a lot of the weaknesses of Philip K. Dick, which is being incomprehensible at points.
Oh,
Very
totally.
incomprehensible at a
Oh,
purist.
cannot deny that.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
I couldn't explain this movie the first time I saw it, and granted, I was only like, let's see, this came out in 2001, so I would have been like a sophomore in high school, and you know that it's about time travel and this kid who, is trying to right the wrongs. Like, this is such a hard movie to describe, and that's not a strength of the director. Like, you don't want your
It
movie to be
really
really
isn't.
hard to describe.
No. I think at this point he was going for far too much artsy
Oh, to it's such
and
a pretentious movie.
ended up with way too much fartsy, if you will.
Yeah, oh, totally.
And so I as I was watching it again, I thought, I know that person, I know that person, I see that person every single day, and none of that was original for 2001.
Yeah.
You know, they were all the stereotypical characters.
I don't know what the creative process was like for writing and directing this film and getting it off the ground, but it just shows why it's always good to have like a very honest creative partner in these endeavors who might be able to say, hey, great nuggets, great kernels in here, but grounding the kernel and the nugget is all of this nonsense.
Yes.
Yeah,
Let's like
totally.
cut this off. Because I'm like, I do enjoy David Lynch's works, not all of them, but a lot of them.
No, of course, yeah.
But it's good to have someone who's like your right-hand person to be honest with you. And it feels like maybe with this production, so to speak, that wasn't the case. It's just like,
Yeah.
yeah.
I don't know that he had a his man Friday to talk to.
Yeah.
You know, I really wish he did, because at that point, maybe they would have said, hey, snap out of it.
Yeah.
You're making too much of this.
Yeah, or like, yeah, let's tweak some things here and there. I mean, like there's like great imagery in the movie, and like from a production standpoint, the fact that this was his first movie is like pretty astounding. But I think it's so interesting when you have directors that have a such a big debut, and like after this came out, so it didn't do very well. And then 3 years later, he did another movie called Southland Tales that nobody really saw, that had a really incredible cast. It was kind of like vignette sort of movie, like an anthology almost. And it's about the end of the world. And I know like Justin Timberlake, The Rock, Sean William Scott are all in it. And I think it's a little bit more coherent, but I mean, he hasn't done anything since that. I think he did one other movie
No.
in like 2010.
I think it might have been the sequel to Donnie
Oh
Darko.
yeah, so I did want to talk about that. He didn't have anything to do with that sequel. The little
No.
girl who played his sister in the original, yeah,
Samantha.
Samantha, it's the same actor
Yeah.
that's in S. Darko.
Right,
But
right.
and I never I really was I wanted to watch it because I wanted to have more to contribute, but oh my God, it is painful. I mean, just the trailer is painful to watch. I mean, it's such a shameless money grab for a movie that didn't make
Oh.
any money to begin with.
And it
Well, I think at the time that they might have been doing that, that it might have been growing that cult following,
Totally.
you know, and that was the only reason why it even got greenlit. But
Yeah, it was released in 2009.
That, yeah, that's about the right amount of time.
So
People enough have been, yeah.
I wanted to sidestep from this for a minute because I have two bits of movie news that I think are worth mentioning that I think is really
Okay.
interesting. M. Night Shyamalan's new movie is coming out this summer, and this might be more exciting for Ben than for Stu. I'm a huge M. Night Shyamalan fan.
You know what? He's hit or miss.
Yeah.
I mean, for me,
Yeah.
so.
I thought Old was not great. I thought the setup was great. There was so much intrigue, but the ending was terrible.
I have not seen that yet.
But his movies, I didn't realize this, that starting with The Visit in 2015, he's been self-financing all of his own movies, and he even remortgaged his house to make Knock at the Cabin.
You're kidding me.
No, but his box office return for The Visit, he spent $5 million,
Okay.
and it made $98 million. For Split, he paid $9 million, and it made $278 million. For Glass, he spent $20 million and made back $247 million. I mean, like, love it or hate it, but like, this man is a box office king.
Well, it seems that way. If he's making that much money off of movies that he's not spending a whole lot on, more power to him.
So it comes
It,
out August 9th. It's called Trap. Ben, have you heard about this?
I have not. I was just going to
Trap.
mention, because it's obligatory, because we went and saw the movie
I
together
already know what you're
in
gonna say.
person. As long as M. Night Shyamalan does not foreshadow too heavily, I will not be able to ruin the ending of the movie based on someone's furtive glance at a mental health facility. And I won't be able to look at Jimmy and say, yep, those grandparents aren't the real grandparents. They're from the mental facility.
Yeah, that's why me and Ben
The
can't see
movie
movies
within
together
like the first
anymore.
15 minutes, I was like, I don't like this.
Yeah,
Oh,
I
my.
did end up liking The Visit, but anyway, so it's called Trap. It stars Josh
Okay.
Hartnett.
Well, he's not been around much.
Well, he was in Oppenheimer,
I know. Oh.
and he was also in one of the new Black Mirror episodes, and he was fucking awesome. It was him and Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad.
Okay, I can see that.
Anyway, this is the tagline for Trap. A father and his teen daughter attend a pop concert where they realize they're at the center of a dark and sinister event. That's a fucking banger of a setup.
Is it like K-pop? J-pop?
I don't know. That's what all
kind
I
of
got.
Pop is it, though? That's what I want.
I love the, they always have such a good elevator pitch. I don't know if you saw Old, but the first like 45 minutes to an hour is so incredible. And the ending, I mean, obviously it made a lot of money. So who gives a fuck what I think, but I just thought the ending right. fell so flat. It was like, what? That's what you're going with?
That's very M. Night Shyamalan though.
It so is. I know a lot of his stuff is like that, but yeah, Knock at the Cabin was fun. Although that was a adaptation, so that wasn't like an original M. Night Shyamalan idea.
Sixth Sense was fun. Signs was fun.
Oh, I love Signs so much. It's one of my favorite horror movies of all time still.
I wouldn't call it a horror movie, though.
Yeah, I guess it's more science fiction.
It's a thriller. It's a science fiction thriller rather than horror. Because I was never afraid during that.
Oh, I was terrified. That scene where they show Joaquin Phoenix watching the news footage and the alien yeah. crosses the alleyway. Ben, can you vouch
well,
for
that
how
was...
fucking scary that was?
No, that was Startle Wonderful. Yeah, that was great. But that was... I would have wanted to see more. But, of course, they did it just for that jump scare.
Yeah, they had a couple good ones. There was one in the cornfields. There was one where the alien was on top of the house. You're right, though. It is more of like a sci-fi thriller, but it hits all the horror beats.
No, it does. No, absolutely. I didn't find it that scary. I mean, let's be honest, an alien that can be defeated by the most plentiful substance on our planet.
Yeah, once again, that's the ending. Gun. Right. Why would you come to a planet that was 75%, you know?
Water. Yeah, at least, you know, Independence Day, they were after our water or other resources or what was the one? Battle Los Angeles. That was a good one.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good one with Aaron Eckhart as the lead, and he's a retiring sergeant in the Army, and all of a sudden aliens attack, and he has to lead a whole new group of men. And it ultimately is a soldier story rather than a sci-fi, but it's also very sci-fi.
Yeah. Speaking of sci-fi.
I was going to ask both of you, how do you feel about some people categorizing Donnie Darko as horror? My take is the most horror thing in the film is actually Evil Dead showing up in the film, and Frank is a movie villain certifiably because he interrupts Evil Dead with a portal. Blasphemous.
I know. Blasphemous. I so agree, Ben. I've heard that lumped in with horror so many times, and there's nothing horror about it.
I don't find it that.
Except for maybe the writing at times.
I did find that to be horrific. Yeah.
I'm really afraid. I'm really afraid that you're the fucking Antichrist.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
I feel like it would have been more of a horror film if they had concentrated on Jim Cunningham. Now, that would have been a horror film. But they didn't. They focused on Donnie Darko.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, apparently the end of the movie, you know, Jim Cunningham kills himself on the golf course.
Right.
And James Duval, who plays Frank, he's like crying in his bed at the end.
Yeah.
And I wanted to understand.
What was the purpose of that?
Like how that happened. So apparently, even though the previous 28 days had never happened, these manipulated people, they still have memories, like dreams almost. Like they have.
Like ghost feelings, if you will.
Yeah. They're haunted in their dreams by their experiences within the Tangent universe. So, you know, Frank holds his right eye. A tear comes from his right eye.
Right.
I think Jim Cunningham just feels so ridden with guilt about his porn dungeon that he kills himself on the golf course.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was evident. But again, I don't... How could any of that have happened if Donnie did die? Because he set all of them up for those other things.
Yeah. I think it's like implying that they have like remnants of memory of the things happening, I guess.
Ultimately, Frank, is he that bad of a guy?
You never really get a sense. Because you don't really think as a person, you just know him as this bunny entity. And then he finally shows up as a person and you're like, well, maybe he, when he ran over Gretchen, maybe he was under the influence. But he was also swerving to avoid hitting an old lady. So it's like, you don't really know. You have to like infer.
Exactly. I don't see him as being a malevolent figure.
No, I think it's like it's like the equivalent of him having a bad dream that he ran some girl over while he was drunk.
Okay, well, I'm not to throw my own personal shit out there, but yeah, I've had that dream. And yeah, it's unsettling, but it's not going to cause me to weep uncontrollably in my bedroom.
Will it cause you to release a single tear from your right eye?
Well, I can't speak to that, but, you know, hey, it's possible.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that J.J. Abrams has officially gotten his authorization to make his Back to the Future movie.
No.
Yes. And
I want them to just leave that shit alone.
Yeah, just leave it alone.
It's been offered to Timothy Chalamet, who has not yet accepted.
No. I don't see him as a comedic actor.
Yeah, his SNL stuff. I don't know if you ever saw him on SNL. It was pretty fucking good.
Okay, all right.
But I'm not disagreeing with you.
Okay, all right. I did see The Wonk, which was horrible.
Yeah.
I saw that, and he was mildly amusing. He was pretty scatterbrained, which was pretty awesome. But it's scatterbrained in a way that you could believe that he could do the things that he did and become the Gene Wilder character later on, maybe.
I will say about Donnie Darko that I watched the director's commentary with Richard Kelly and Kevin Smith.
Kevin Smith?
It was super fascinating because Kevin Smith, he was not rude to Richard Kelly, but he was definitely like, assertively poking holes in some of his stuff. And there were some things that Richard
I
Kelly
love
could not
Kevin didn't... Smith for that shit. I love it.
And it did help to explain some things, but like, you know, it's supposed to be like a comic booky sort of superhero movie.
And
like an unconventional super
balls short.
Yes, totally. Ah. So like, you know, I read that okay, yeah, so he's got telekinesis because he like rips this engine off of an airplane, which nobody fucking got.
No. Right. Cause he can bury the axe in the head of a mascot statue outside the school.
If it's made of copper and you have a hard enough steel edge, you can poke a hole in copper. It's pretty malleable, but it doesn't explicitly say that this guy is doing something superhuman or otherworldly or anything. It's just kind of bleh.
And it's kind of buried in the conversation with him and Gretchen, because the first time they meet, like, he saves her from the bullies and she's like, oh, Donnie Darko, that sounds like a superhero name. And there's a conversation, he's like, oh, maybe I do have superpowers or something to that effect. And it's like, okay, maybe you are a superhero. Is this Unbreakable? I don't know. Did you bench press 500
exactly
pounds? I didn't see it.
It's like, well, are you? Because it's the responsibility of the filmmaker to tell us.
Or to at least make it clear one way or the other. Not to explicitly tell us. I don't need a big S on his chest or anything, but I would have loved to have had more explanation.
Yeah, and the only time that there is explanation that's very direct is very weird, because it's toward the end when you've gone through all of this stuff and Samantha Darko and Rose Darko are on the plane And in the theatrical cut, there's the voiceover of the conversation he's having with his professor. And it's like, oh, if there's a vessel big enough, and it's talking about time travel, and it's the audio of that conversation while their plane's about to,
No.
he's about to pluck the engine from. It's like, this is just a really weird placement because you're doing exposition in the worst way possible with this voiceover when you could have explained it in a lot of other ways up to this point.
Yeah, totally. Like, what are you saying? Is this
Yeah.
like, I feel like they were implying that that turbulence was gonna end up being the engine that gets ripped off, and like his mom and sister are gonna die.
And that's what it was led us to believe. I mean, we really were led to believe that. And unfortunately, I think again, it fell completely short because I was thinking while he's standing there or sitting there on that ridge at morning that that plane was their plane.
Yeah, I mean the timeline adds up.
It does. It all meshes. But obviously, that's not the case.
Yeah. And when he's explaining it in the director's commentary that when the engine falls through the room at the beginning, this alternate universe has already been created. It was created by a phenomenon that we don't even know, that is not mentioned, is not hinted at. So it's like, what the fuck, man? Do you not want us to understand your movie? Because you're doing a great job.
Oh, Gold, he did an excellent job of that. But what's even worse, I would hold on to a movie that kept my interest with character development, with maybe something shocking happening earlier on or whatever. I mean, there were some relatively shocking things, but again, it comes down to where is this going? By the halfway point, I was like, this is just a story of a kid who's very disturbed. And if it was going to be taken the Stephen King way, he'd end up barring the door to his classroom and shooting all of his classmates. If this was going to go a different way, which it did, no one really got hurt ultimately.
Right. The whole movie never happened.
Right. And I find that to be a cheat.
Yeah, that's a cop out. I totally agree with that.
It's the modern equivalent of it was
I
all a
know,
dream.
and I
Oh, I
hate that. What was that
know.
famous sitcom that did that after like 8 years?
Oh shit. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a whole other conversation here where you could maybe dive into more films that handle this disassociation aspect in a better way and in a more terrifying way. Because when I was watching this, it's like, yeah, I'll finish this, but this really makes you want to go back and watch Jacob's
I
Ladder
was
again
just
so I can
gonna
really.
say that.
Yeah.
Jacob's Ladder. What an amazing film.
The original one,
And
not the remake.
yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I Jacob's Ladder, absolutely. Or you could go even further back. What was it called? It had William Hurt in it.
Oh, Altered States.
Altered States.
Yeah. That's a fucked up movie.
That one, cool.
They picked their lanes and wow, did they nail those
Oh,
lanes?
they did indeed,
They
yes.
did. Yeah,
Yeah.
Donnie Darko, it's like a movie that begs to be picked apart, but then it doesn't have the muscle mass to like hold it. Like as soon as you start asking questions, it's like it just falls
You
apart.
start pulling those threads and it starts to unravel.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I think I'll always have some love for this movie and like respect that, you know, whether you like it or you didn't like it, it was a big swing for a first-time director. And I mean, just the fact that he did it, you know.
Got to give him props for the cast that he put together.
Everybody did the best with what they had.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
There's that scene in the end of the bedroom, at the end when it's just Mary McDonald and Jake Gyllenhaal, and he's like, how does it feel to have a wacko for a son? And she's just the way that she delivers, it feels wonderful. It's just so genuine.
The veterans in the cast definitely delivered on.
By far, yeah, by far. But again, you could see Jake Gyllenhaal's talent. You could see Maggie Gyllenhaal's talent. while it wasn't showcased in a way that, you know, was going to really throw them out there, obviously they became names after this film.
Yeah, this was Jake Gyllenhaal's second movie after October Sky.
Right. Maggie, this was her first one.
Yes, this was her first one, and it was Jake's
Yeah.
idea to bring her on.
Perfect.
It's no Bubble Boy, I'll tell you that much.
Oh,
That movie holds up.
I just looked it up because I wasn't sure about the release date. It came out the same year, so I don't know which one came out first in 2001.
Oh my
Once again, though,
goodness.
Bubble Boy picked a lane. Bubble Boy picked a lane.
What?
Bubble Boy
Yeah,
picked a lane.
again. Yeah, definitely picked a lane and stuck with it.
Now, do you consider Groundhog Day a time travel movie?
No.
It's a
No,
time
because he
loop movie,
doesn't,
right?
it's a time loop movie. He doesn't travel through time other than forward up to the point where he either dies or goes to sleep that night, and then everything starts over.
Yeah, it's like a lack of time travel.
Truly. Yeah.
It's funny because that's what I considered Donnie Darko, because everything is relegated to the loop within the film, right? So it
Right.
does feel like Groundhog Day, where you do get a slight return at the end, but you don't really see anyone moving forward or back. Unless you
Yeah.
like
No, that's very
read
true.
into the text that is associated with the movie outside of the film, mind you, of hey, here's the future slash past ghost of whatever you want to call it, who's navigating this time stream. That was another fun
Yeah.
one. I Of theories that whole film was him running a simulation, a time simulation, and that this whole film was the effect of his a billionth simulation. Sure.
I guess the biggest question I have is why is he hallucinating Frank? Because that's what they are, right? They're hallucinations.
Yeah.
But why Frank?
I think that Frank is trying to get him to commit a series of acts to ultimately close the tangent universe.
Because Frank is a manipulative head, of course, which they explain very thoroughly in the
Yeah,
theatrical cut.
very thoroughly.
Very thoroughly. I'm sure it's in there somewhere, but you just don't see it or hear it or experience
In
it.
any
Of
way, shape,
course.
or form. Yeah, no, nobody would pick up on that. It's one of those movies where, like, I don't know. It's a fun 100-minute watch. There's fun visuals, good music, the cinematography is good, the casting is good. You know, there's like a lot of strong elements in the movie, but just like you said, Stu.
If you take the cinematography alone, good film. You take the music alone, good film. You take the performance of the actors and actresses, again,
Yeah.
good film. Push them all together, confused nonsense at times. I didn't feel a soul there. I didn't feel a back to the movie. So. But I was in a strange place then too. I was dealing with a 1 year or 2 year old and a 1 year old at that
Yeah.
point. So,
Well, there's some movies that you just watch that are just like big dumb fun, you know, like the Marvel movies or this or the
oh,
superhero movies,
absolutely.
and you know, they don't want to be picked apart. They're not supposed to be picked apart. They're just meant to be watched and enjoyed.
Oh,
And
yeah.
Donnie Darko is a movie that if you just watch it on a very superficial level, it's like, yeah, that was fun, but it has so many different insinuations and lines and ideas that it's like it's begging to be picked apart. But then
Oh,
as
it
soon as
really
you
is.
start doing that, it just completely falls apart.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, we haven't
horrible
even
too.
talked about the blob tendrils that are God's path, whatever you want to call it, whatever those
Yeah.
are. I remember watching the film the first time and
God's channel.
the thing that really got me is the bad CGI that was like this, the fist that was beckoning with the one where it's like they should have just left that on the cutting room floor because that was terrible.
They stole the effect straight from the abyss with the water
Oh,
snorkel thing
totally.
that comes up through the. They stole it completely from there, and they did better in the abyss, which was what, 10 years before
Oh,
almost?
probably like 20.
Oh no, not
It was
that
I
much.
think 1988 or something. Yeah, so yeah, about 10.
Oh, now I've got to
What it
look it up,
reminded me
Jimmy.
of, so Murphy is on a Transformers kick for anyone who's watching Murphy's My Son, and he is really obsessed with Transformers Beast Wars right now. So that's like late 90s bad CGI. It looks like it came from maybe PlayStation or N64. That's what those Donnie Darko God's Path blob tendrils remind me of.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I stand corrected, Jimmy. You were absolutely right. It was 89 for the Abyss. I thought that it was much more towards the middle of the 90s, but
Either way, they did it better.
oh yeah,
But
by far.
I think the reason that I'll
Yeah.
always love that tendril scene is because they put it to Joy Division level Tear Us Apart Again, and it's just such a beautiful, they hook you with the music. It's like
But
the key to
again,
your soul.
yeah. And the fact that it was set in the 80s,
Yeah.
that makes a big difference too, I
But it
think.
doesn't really feel like an 80s movie.
It doesn't, it doesn't feel like an 80s movie because, again, it was done in 2001. So.
Except for what there was some presidential debate stuff, a Redskins game from back then, and the meat. Outside of that, there's really not a whole lot of context to give you the 80s feel. Maybe some the vehicles.
Vehicles, maybe, but you would even see those in the parking lot at my high school today. So, or,
It's just,
tomorrow.
it's very vaguely 80s.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I don't know if I have much more to say about Donnie Darko.
No, I have no
Do you
closing
have any
thoughts other than I'm glad that I watched it one more time just to realize that I'm never going to watch it again.
I mean, maybe watch the commentary with Kevin Smith because it's pretty entertaining.
I might end up watching the director's cut at some point because I did see that it is on Peacock. So it would be interesting to see maybe what the differences are. But then again, I would go into it knowing that I'm usually a fan of less exposition. And if you have a theatrical cut, you should probably get the job done there instead of in your director's cut. So if you already have a film that is maybe a little more than a convoluted, you shouldn't rely on your director's cut to just like add pages from a fictional book that's supposed to prop up this film. Not the way to do it.
Yeah.
No.
Many, many years later.
Yeah.
I might actually dig into that book though,
Yeah.
because it sounds like it'd be my jam. I feel like what might end up happening is I might check out the fictional book that's a supplement to the film and enjoy it more than I did the actual film.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
without a
mean,
doubt. Yeah, if that was really a
there's only
book.
four chapters in the book, and each chapter is like two paragraphs.
Huh.
So it's not really like a written book. It
Or
just
Roberta
is.
Sparrow really wasn't as busy as they let on. That's Grandma
No,
Beth we're talking about, they did her dirty on that one.
it's like a couple of morsels to fill in the plot holes.
It's like they threw that out there as an
It was
afterthought.
totally an afterthought.
I wanted to mention one really quick thing too that I found interesting. I was a dork and rented the Donnie Darko DVD from my local library, and on the back of the DVD, they were actually comparing Donnie Darko to, drum roll please, Stranger Things, and almost like doing this thing where it's like Donnie Darko
What?
was a precursor for Stranger Things. It's really weird
No.
because they're like, oh yeah, Spielbergian and teenagers and blah, blah, blah. It's just like, I
No.
don't see the link at all here outside of very loosely sci-fi elements. Sorry, try
Yeah, I
again.
mean, some teenagers ride their bicycles. I
Yeah.
guess if that's what you want,
Oh, that's
that's the
true.
only
Yeah.
Spielbergian
That's about,
trope.
really, that's
I think
about
part of
it.
it is
Yeah.
the whole 4K remaster element, and I think this is what they're trying to do to market it. But marketing can fall very flat sometimes. And this is one of those cases because if I were someone who didn't know about the film and for some reason I picked it up and read, oh, Stranger Things, okay, then I started watching it and be like, this is not anything like that at all. Why are you
Yeah,
trying?
you're
What
going to
did you
be
try to
even
feed
more
me?
disappointed.
Yeah.
That would have pissed me right the fuck off.
Like, so, okay, so I will give this movie 5 more minutes. And okay, I did, and I'm gone.
Anything left for you to say, Ben?
I feel like I've said my fill. Donnie Darko, a lot of great ideas, except the great ideas don't ever really congeal in an end product that is cohesive and makes sense for the viewer. So maybe sometime down the line, they can have somebody reboot it as a series, which will probably happen anyway. Great soundtrack, great performances, but overall, I feel like I probably won't watch it again.
Yeah, lots of interesting components held together by floss.
Tears for Fears.
Yeah, very, very thin
Yeah, dollar store
floss.
floss.
Oh,
Apogee.
geez, yes.
Well, if you want to find the rest of our episodes, you can go to soundcloud.com/movieshowtheater. You can reach out to our Facebook page. You can also reach out to our Instagram, send us a message of a movie you would like us to do, and we would be happy to do that. Ben and Stu, thank you so much for coming on today. So until next time, I'm Jimmy.
I'm Ben.
I'm Stu.
And this has been Movie
Joe!
Theater.
Stay movies, everybody.